Welcome, guys, to a new episode of the Analytics for You podcast. This is a space to talk about technology, digital solutions, and analytics in the healthcare field. My name is Mariel Montero. I am here with Ruben. How are you doing, Ruben?
I'm doing very well, and I'm very excited because we have a really cool guest today.
Yes.
How are you doing, Mariel? And
I feel very good, and today we have a special guest, Jorge Ortiz, our Yes. IT support. Welcome, Jorge. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. And very excited to be here and to participate with all of you.
Good to have you, Jorge.
Thank you.
Yes. As we know, you are a writer. Our special question for today is, what is your favorite book?
So, that's... tough question. Yeah, everyone said it.
Right? I know, tough right? question. That's a tough one.
But I would say, honestly, it's Aragon. One of the first books that I ever finished. And it's mostly because I love fantasy. Fantasy is my thing. And Aragon has a very different type of feeling to something like Lord of the Rings or something like Star Wars too, where it's this story about these really powerful creatures or these really powerful beings that are fighting this evil, whereas Aragon is more like just your average run-of-the-mill farmer boy who suddenly gets all this power through a dragon and becoming a dragon rider, and how he deals with that, how a regular person would actually deal with that. And I prefer the book over a lot of other ones, because also they switch a lot between Aragorn's point of view and then his cousin's Rohan was his I think it was Ron, but yeah, it switches between those two perspectives a lot, and it's an interesting perspective to see it from the side of Rohan, which is a soldier, and the side of the farmer, who just so happens to become this amazing dragon rider.
Wow, that's very cool. I honestly do not know. I said, is Aragorn? That it's a completely different thing from Lord of the Rings, right? I mean, it's not the same character, right?
Yeah, no. Aragorn right. is a similar fantasy with like dragons and you know, orcs and stuff like that. But it's not, it has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings itself.
Oh, it sounds interesting. It sounds fun. Mariel mentioned it as if everybody knew, but not everybody really knows that Jorge is a writer. And I know you have at least one book besides the one that I've seen at the office. Do you have any other books that you've written, Jorge?
Yes, I like writing short stories. I really like, I have a very short attention span. So, writing a long story for me is a hard process. Even though I do like it, I do have stories in my brain, which are humongous. But I've written Blue is my magnum opus. I call it my Harry Potter, mm-hmm. which is the love of my life. It's the one I loved, writing. I was, for the people who read the book, they can notice, and they have noticed, that I was not in the best headspace at that moment. So it's a story about struggle. It's a story about the depression and some very hard hitting, very solid themes that it's basically I wouldn't say horror story because it's not horror, but it's definitely suspense. I try to make it a suspense book. But then I also have a short story collection that I did, which I made it like a little magazine type thing. Didn't print out. I just printed out one copy, and I gave that copy to a friend of mine who really wanted to read it. But I do have all my books like online and everything. So, but I also have that collection, which has about 10 stories. Then I also wrote War Torn, which was my first book ever, which is just a young adult novel about your regular young adult novel things. A group of teenagers are taking on an evil organization around the world, you know.
Love it. Yeah, that's so very normal, like, teenage.
Yeah, right, right. And I wrote it when I was like 16, 17. So it was exactly during those times. It's to me, it's kind of embarrassing to me when people read it sometimes, because, you know, I was 16. You read a lot of stuff that's like, really, dude? And it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have your imagination really running wild. So
it's, yeah.
But most people don't get to share it, and yours is not only shared, but permanently etched in history. So yeah, that's great. So then obviously Jorge knows what he talks about when he talks about particular books. But I like, before I answer the question that Mariel brought up and give you my books, I think it's such a great mixture to have people that have that creative flair inside of the IT industry. Most of the times IT can be boring and very objective and very direct.
Yeah.
And to the point. And when you bring some creativity into it, it really expands your mind, and it can lead to some pretty outstanding things. Every innovation that's come out in the technology world really needs to have that mixture of engineering and art. And you can't have art without being a creative person. So that's why I'm attracted to people like Jorge, and why I always feel blessed when we have people like you around. So thank you, Jorge, for you know, bringing those perspectives to a lot of things that we do in the IT world. From my standpoint,
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
And I completely agree with what you're saying about the creative side of IT that not a lot of people look at, because like you said, innovation comes with creativity, and doing the same thing just because you know it works is fine, but maybe you want to break that process. Maybe you want to try something different. Yeah. That's where really things happen.
Yep. And it's something that it's often overlooked, but my perception of creativity and the engineering or the technological side of IT is that under the right circumstances, you can teach a creative person almost everything, if not everything, about IT. But even under the right circumstances, you cannot teach an IT person to be creative. You know, to the extent that they become a creative person by nature. And I've always found that very intriguing, because you have to have that person from scratch already have that creative mindset and have that creative approach. Whereas if they're just an engineering person, they don't tend to make, you know, crossover very well. So like I said, I'm always attracted to people that have the creative force, and then either they already know some IT or you can come in and teach them. It's a great mixture of qualities, and it's not often available. So,
for sure.
So going back to the question that Mariel asked, I'm definitely into all sorts of sci-fi and things like that as well, and a lot of other really cool things. I highly enjoy a lot of the, and I remember very much all my teenagehood books that I read through the years, and I read a lot of the comics as well, the Garfields of this world and the Mafaldas in Puerto Rico. So I've been an avid reader through all my lifetime. But in the last few years, probably the last decade or so, I've gravitated towards what a lot of people refer to as self-help, but I always just call them self-improvement books. And I've kind of narrowed it down to my four favorite books, and I call them my Bibles, in the sense that they help me a lot in business, and they help me really a lot in life as well. And I'm in no particular order. I'm going to mention them because I have a hard time picking a favorite one. But one is The Little Red Book of Selling by Jeffrey Gitomer. It's an amazing little book. Even the title says that it's little, but it's got so much insight. And even though it is about selling, because he is a sales master, it's not about selling only a product or a service in a company. If you read between the lines, you'll see that it's about, you know, yourself, about you being a good salesperson of yourself and of your life. The other one is the 1% solution. I forget the name of the author. I'm sorry, but I'll, by the way, we'll put in the link to Jorge's books and these books in the behind the scenes that we publish, so the audience can get to them. But the 1% solution is also an incredible, and it's also a nice short book. I want to say it's not even 100 pages, maybe a couple, maybe 150 pages or something like that. And as the title suggests, it's really about looking at how you can improve things only 1%. And if you improve something by only 1%, you'd be amazed at the results that you get from there, because most things in life are actually decided by the difference of 1% or less. And one of the great examples of that is, and makes it easy for everybody to visualize, but the 100-meter races are always decided by much less than 1%. And yet it's, you know, you winning that race declares you the fastest man in the world. And, you know, coming in second is not, you know, you're the second fastest man in the world. So it's amazing. It's amazing what a 1% solution and approach can do for you. And the third one is the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which is, of course, that's a worldwide phenomenon type of book that's been translated in every single language in the globe, and many, many different versions of it have come out, including things for teenagers and kids and things like that. So it's become a franchise of a book. But the reality is that those habits are really powerful. And if you read them and if you follow them, you're pretty much almost in 99% guaranteed success. And so I actually go back and reread these books at least once every couple of years. And I've seen how I don't even have many notes from them. I just read them, and I absorb them, and I tend to do a lot of the things that are in those books, just because they've become such a part of what I was educated in, both in college and in masters. Even though nobody ever taught me the books, I've actually found them myself and I've read it myself. The last one, which is a little bit tougher of a read because it's actually written by a PhD researcher, but it's also a great book, is Good to Great. And that was Jim Collins, if I recall correctly. And that one talks about how some companies made the jump from good to great. And it's unfortunately subject to time, because I think it was done in the early 90s, if I remember correctly. And some of the companies that were profiled, actually, like Motorola, have really, you know, not stayed great. But he did follow up books where he explains why, you know, you were great, but you know, you don't stay that way. So he's got the Built to Last and some other books that kind of explain why those things happen. But those are really insightful books, and it really, you know, again, they show you a lot about how organizations work and how some people can be successful inside of the organizations or be the leaders of successful organizations. So, yeah, not quite as interesting as Aragon, but definitely, you know, things that are important, that have become very important to me. Mariel, how about you?
It's amazing, Ruben. You are an avid reader.
Yeah.
For me, my favorite book of all time is House of Spirits from Isabel Allende.
Yes, very
it's
good.
A fantastic story told in so much detail that it seems real, and I feel like I can relate to the characters, and it gives me the opportunity to create new stories in my head.
Mm-hmm. That's where they all start.
Exactly. Yeah, imagination is the greatest thing. I mean, it really drives us. And it's amazing how it works. You were even mentioning earlier, Jorge, about, you know, some of the books you wrote and you weren't probably in the best mental state, but that's exactly what the imagination does. You know, it kind of helps you, you know, deal with a lot of those things. And just it's like you're saying, Mariela, you get ideas, you get new stories in your head. And it's incredible how the human mind needs that. And it's been proven through, you know, forever through history.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
The cavemen were drawing things on, you know, on caves. So the human mind needs to have that imagination always flowing in those stories.
Yes.
Yeah, and I find it it's a catharsis of sorts. It's like when you write down all these ideas that you have, even if they're not like they don't have to be good ideas, they don't have to be logical ideas or anything. Just when you write down these ideas and you realize like, oh my God, this was in my brain. This was like it helps you just unload. It helps you unload in a lot of aspects. Yeah.
And on top of that, which is a great, you know, everything you said is really good points. And on top of that, when you foment that in others, it's so satisfying. So you being creative, you have an imagination, but also, you know, going to a kid or going to a teenager or even a grandparent, you know, and having a chat and doing things that foment and, you know, and sponsor that those flights of imagination. Oh, it's so cool. That's why we enjoy going to places like Disney World and Universal and everything.
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
right. I mean, we love it because it takes us to different worlds and we, you know, we let our minds just go free.
I agree.
Yes, but let's get into it. Jorge, please tell us about yourself and how you discover your passion for technology.
Okay. So I'm gonna start with my passion for technology and where it comes from, because it does talk a little bit about myself from there. The first thing I remember about technology was one day my grandfather, he was a tinker. My grandfather, from my mother's side, his name was Zaid. He was a tinker. He always had like computers everywhere. This was during the times where IBM was, you know, the pinnacle of everything, before Apple, before all these things. And he sat me in front of an IBM machine and I saw this black screen and just this, like this little flickering, green, light. And he said like, okay, so let's teach you how to use a computer. And obviously I had no idea what I was doing. I was just touching random buttons, but it sparked something in me. It sparked a sort of something that I didn't know even existed, a sort of a love for something. I don't even know how to explain it, but basically a love for technology that I never knew how far I was going to take it or how far it was going to take me. And then I do say it talks a little bit about myself, because a lot of my love for technology and love for a lot of things I have in life right now come from my grandfather, because we were very close. We used to share so many things. He was also a writer. He used to work. He was one of the first, if not the first instructor, in Puerto Rico for the IBM machines. Back in the day, like he was one of the technological magnuses of his time. But a lot of it comes from there. A lot of it comes from his ideas of always showing me not to take the easier route in anything. Because in technology, one of the things that a lot of people like to do is go the easy way, you know. Obviously, if something works, why fix it? But he taught me if something works, maybe it can work better. And from there, I basically took a lot of ideas. And I used to, my mom used to hate buying me toys because I used to break them apart. I used to break every toy that I had. I tore them apart. My reason was always because I wanted to see what was inside. That was always my reason. So it's like, oh, my mom would, you know, why did you do that? I just wanted to see what was inside. Of course, I never knew how to put things back together. That came later. But it was definitely, that's where my love for all of this started, for my passion for technology started.
That's so cool. And that's usually how it starts. You know, you have somebody, and that's kind of what I was saying earlier, you know, where you, if you take somebody else and you put them in the right structure, or you do the right exercises or have the right conversations with them and get them into their creative sides and to tap into their imagination, things like that will happen. And then, of course, your grandfather obviously sounds to be looks to be like a very smart man, was a very smart man, because he, as you said, he said, it's not that it just works well, maybe we can make it work even better.
Yeah.
And that's a perspective that it has a real challenge inside of it. And sometimes you don't get it. Sometimes most people, will hear that and they're like, whatever, I'll let somebody else figure out how to make it better. But when you internalize it as your grandfather telling you that, and then you say, okay, well, I'm going to take that same approach. I'm going to do it. I'm going to accept that challenge. Then of course it takes you to some great places. So, that's really cool.
Okay. For sure. Thank you, Ruing. And, mm-hmm. And he actually, my grandfather honestly reminds me a lot, or reminded me, a lot of people like you, Ruing, people like, mm-hmm. People who are much more inquisitive, much deeper into things than just the base level. My grandfather was also a lover of self-improvement books. He never called them self-help books either, because he never believed that that you were helping yourself. You were improving. You were always improving. That was always where you were going. And he always said that, the day that you don't improve is the day that you're dead. So
that's right.
So like,
that's right.
He used to, so that's why there's like, and I don't know if you noticed, but there was always, since I came in, there was always this comfort that I had with you, but it was because of that reason, because it reminded me of that type of person. It reminded me like, oh, okay. Yeah. I know where the mindset is,
I definitely noticed, and it's vice versa. So I hope you noticed it too. I feel very comfortable with you and your approach to things. I can see why your grandfather really had a lot of input into that. We have a saying in the office. I don't know if you've actually heard it yet, but it's probably in one of those stickers that Emily and I put around the office in Puerto Rico, and it says, "You stop being good when you stop getting better," and that's exactly, that goes into that improvement, process instead of helping process. You have to always look at, what can you do better today than you did yesterday. And that's why the 1% solution are things that are attractive to me, because I don't need to be 10% better today. I mean, if I weigh 100 pounds and I want to lose 10 pounds, go down to 90, I'm not going to lose them overnight. And in fact, if I lose 10 pounds overnight, I'm very likely to regain them and probably even shoot back up, by five and end up at 105 instead of 90 where I want it to be. Whereas if I go to 99 and then 98 and then 97 and I do it in a healthy and measured way, I'm more likely to get the result that I want and the success that I want to approach. So it's all tied together. It's all tied together. I'm glad you feel that way about me, because that's exactly what I want to see from everybody. And by the way, in the process of doing that, we make a lot of mistakes, right? Yeah. And we have to embrace those. Yeah, we have to embrace those mistakes. I remember early on, you told me something about, I think you lost the
credit card.
No, credit card, that's right.
The first week I was here.
Exactly. So you see how, I thought it was a key. So I remember it as a key. So obviously it was very important. It was actually extremely important to you at the moment. And you felt very guilty about it and very embarrassed. And for me, it's like, it's just another mistake. And we're going to make mistakes. If anybody expects us not to, then they're confused, because that's not the way that life works. And of course, some mistakes are worse than others, and we definitely don't want to have those happen if we can avoid it. But once the mistake has been done, what can you do? I mean, just do your best to fix it, do your best to learn from it, and move on to the next thing. Because at the end of the day, as you can see, I didn't even remember that it was a credit card. To me, it was a key. So at that time it could have been huge, but as time goes on, it doesn't mean much. It just means that we learn from something and we move forward. So, Mariel, we've taken a long time with your questions today. They've been great.
They've been good questions. Yeah.
Ruben, do you have a moment in your life when you discover your passion for technology?
Ah, that's good. I didn't want to throw it in there and take Jorge's thunder, but yes, I did. And it's very similar actually to what Jorge was saying. I uh, my dad one day came home with a Commodore 64. And that also was just like you said, you just turn the screen on and then just a little prompt, green prompt would turn on. And from there, you had to figure everything else out. And at first, I had no clue how to use it. And funny enough, instead of putting it in my room, which I actually had space for and everything, he put it in his room. And that meant that, you know, at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning, they were sleeping and I was playing in the computer, figuring things out. So, you know, I always remember that I was definitely under 12. So I want to say probably like 8. So I must have been like 1980 or 81, something like that. And I'd have to go in the internet and find out, because maybe I'm misremembering when the actual Commodore 64 came out. But I do remember exactly where it was and what, you know, we were living in the first house that I knew. And so just playing with that computer, figuring things out, and then playing a specific game, a game that was called Load Runner, and just figuring out that game and getting up stage after stage after stage made me really get into technology a lot. I did not break the Commodore 64, even though I did exactly what you were saying, Jorge. I would, every single thing that I had, I would break it apart into pieces and try to figure out how they worked. But that was precious. The Commodore 64, I did not want to break down because I wasn't sure that I could, you know, that I could get it back together and working. And then eventually it did break down by itself. Who knows what, you know, humidity or maybe a power surge or something, and it broke down. By that time, I had moved on a little bit from it. I probably was now into Ataris and things like that, but I still, when it broke down, you know, I did try to then fix it and make it work, and I was unsuccessful about it. But when I opened it up, I saw all the hardware and everything inside of a computer and things like that. So that's where it started. That's where it started, and it never really waned from there. So I've always been into technology, and loved it, you know, from that moment on. So
it's really awesome how I usually hear the same perspective from everybody who's a tech geek. You know, right? We all come from more or less the same tree. You know, somebody sat us down, somebody said like, "Yo, play around," and then we just went like, "Yeah, hey, I want to play around," and we started figuring things out, and then things, you know, happen. And if anything happens, you just try to figure it out. Hey, what happened? So let me see what happened. Yeah. Yep. Love that. Yeah.
Yep. And we all do. We all tend to usually play with very similar games. I had like the Lego. You know, everybody tends to use the techie guys tend to use Legos because they can build stuff. Yeah. Or back in the day, it was a game called Tinker Toys, which was amazing because you had all the different pieces that you can build, all sorts of stuff. Nowadays, it's the great thing now is that it's all digital. So now you have all these, and I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden on the worlds. But you know, you build all these worlds now, and everybody inside of the worlds builds their own gadgets and their own characters and their own things. And it's exactly the same thing. It's just virtual.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people complain, oh, the kids are not doing anything with their hands, or, you know, they're always playing video games. Well, they're still using their imagination. They're still using being very creative, and, you know, expanding on the skills that they have. So it's just done in a way that some people don't identify with it because they don't actually see a tactile thing. It's all in that inside of that screen, but it's just as good or better. And it's been proven. I mean, by now there's hundreds of psychological studies that say that it's just as good, if not better, as well as the fact that, you know, the society hasn't gone down the drain. So in fact, we're making more, the societies are making more money and having better access and more things to do because of these great tools that we have now. So.
Yeah, no, and Minecraft is the perfect example for this.
That's it.
Minecraft is a world. Like I never got into Minecraft because I was just never able to like get into really deep into it, but it was so huge. Like, and that was part of the problem. Part of the problem is you go in and what they tell you is, well, do whatever you want. And sometimes it's a bit overwhelming. And it's like, oh my God, I can do whatever I actually want.
Yeah. But the thing is that it's what we had, you know, as we were, when we were younger. Now, you know, you're certainly younger, a lot younger than I am, but it's still a different, you're still a different generation than what these things are really targeted to. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, the kids are the ones that are really seeing that, see the potential of this thing. Cause definitely. Like you said, they open that up and they see a blank slate. I can do anything I want. Well, then of course I'm going to do anything I want, you know? And so that's that as we get older, that's the sad part. You know, as we get older, we get more finite in the way that we see things, but to them it's not, it's just an unlimited potential. So
wow, it's awesome that we are all passionate people. It is truly always a pleasure to have a special guest on the podcast. Jorge, thank you very much for joining us. This is
thank
a wrap
so
for today.
I want to thank you too, Jorge. Very much. I very much enjoyed this.
Yes.
Thank you. And I'm always available for you guys for any reason.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes. Goodbye.
See you later.
See you guys. Oh, 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 oh